As has been already mentioned, Pompeian society was a mixture of cultures with a Semitic root of which Greek and Roman cultures have been grafted. In a simplistic fashion, this varied province can be said to have given Pompeian society its principal attributes: provincial, hardworking, open to external cultures, entrepreneurial. It is an interesting detail that recent analysis of the human bones found in Pompeii by Dr. Estelle Laser tell us a fair amount about the population of the time. Studying the bones of Pompeian society, we can learn much about ancient Roman society and the individual's lifestyle and health. The surprise is that the life expectancy and proportion of obese people is similar to that found in modern society. Average height was pretty much as it is today in modern Naples, 1.6 meters for men and 1.54 meters for women. 10% of society was showing symptoms of obesity. A minority of women were suffering from a superficial hormonal dysfunction, an HFI, slight thickening of the frontal bone of the skull, which some physicians believe is actually present in approximately 12% of modern population. Lifespan was longer than previously expected. The age range of the bone samples was similar to that one you would expect today. The incidence of age-related disease was similar to that of today. Pompeian society was split in a number of ways. Rather than hazard a pure list, we attempt to give a picture of how these groups may have interacted to create Pompeii's social structure. Social groups in Pompeii: male to female ratio, slave to libertus, plebeian to noble, local civilian to foreign merchants. Rich to poor, both Roman men and Roman women had the right to personal wealth. All classes of Roman citizens could aspire to wealth, slaves included. Merchants as well as locals could be rich or poor. Trade groups and guilds. Most trade groups were open to both sexes. Some trades were exclusive to men, for example, politics. Trade groups and guilds were likely for plebeians or freed slaves. The nobility would have their clients run their businesses. Foreigners could take local residence and patronage of local noblemen, likely arrived via maritime trade routes. Religion. Both male and females could follow the traditional religions. The head of the family, the pater familias, was responsible for family rites, ancestors. Some public religions might have a greater male or female focus, particularly the mystery religions of eastern province, such as Dionysiac religion, so famous for the painting in the villas of the mysteries. All, subjects to sex and pertinence for the given religion. All. Other examples, games, supporters, or late-night drinkers. All. Whilst elections were open to all citizens, city, municipal, political roles were in reality difficult to achieve and required access to a great deal of private wealth. As such, they implied belonging to or being heavily sponsored by the elite. There are a number of examples of how this multicultural assemblage reflected itself in the development of the city. Religious beliefs were widespread and included Eastern religions imported via the trade routes from very early on. Architecture, including the palaestra, bath, and theater, established trade with a broad variety of regions across the Mediterranean, ranging from Gaul to the eastern Hellenic Mediterranean and Egypt. Roman domination and Sulla's colonization in 80 BC set the print of Pompeii's final social structure. The definition of a written constitution together with a clear system of rule and political career path of magistrates, the Roman cursus honorum, which largely reflected that of Rome itself and would rarely require the Roman Senate's involvement except in extreme cases. The top of the social ladder was therefore the equivalent of Rome's two consuls, the duvars, in other Roman cities that provided a clear path of accessible to almost all citizens who could therefore aspire to climb the social ladder. Petronius Tremolaccio would be the example of this social mobility. Of course, things are never clear, black and white. There are a number of classes of people not permitted to participate in such elections. For example, actors, dancers, prostitutes, and gladiators. And even other lower class citizens might find it prohibitive since a degree of personal wealth was required, which implied that in reality, political tenure was generally for the rich. Society was not only split into rich and poor, or upper class and lower class, but also in more articulated subgroups, such as groups of supporters at the games, crafts and guilds like the fullers, bakers, and muleteers, or indeed by religious belief. An example. Nowadays, we can visit Pompeii and see how the house of Gaius Julius Polybius has been restored and made part of a high-tech tour, hologram et al. He was a libertus, a free slave. His bakeries had made him rich, and he was very active in society. At the time of the eruption, he was candidate for political office. In a touching example of the public and private spheres of a single family, excavation of his house in the town center brought a room to light within the skeletons of the 13 people were found, two of them holding hands, another aged 16 or 17 was pregnant. DNA analysis had shown they all belonged to the same family. We know of Gaius' bid for office thanks to graffiti such as "The muleteers urged the election of Gaius Julius Polybius as duvir," or "I ask you to elect Gaius Julius Polybius ad aisle. He gets good bread." The two graffiti above, short as they are, give many clues to the well-developed structure of Pompeian society. They tell us about Polybius, the rich baker who had aspired to being elected, and presumably at different times. The fact that they are all written suggests the broader population actively participated and made a difference in such elections. They tell us that there were obviously an open choice of breads, an opinion as to which was good or bad bread. From this we might deduce that other trades are equally well developed. And last but not least, but there were recognized groups with such people could readily associate or disassociate themselves, in the case the group being the muleteers. One of Pompeii's wonders is the numerous and varied examples of written records which lay within its extremely fluid yet highly structured society. Graffiti. We have numerous graffiti on walls and messages of different natures, such are testimonies of everyday life, and others are closer to political and electoral manifestos, such as the examples above. Commemorative plaques which give a clear testimony of the patronage activity from the broadest cross-section of society. Even freed slaves could aspire and actually leave a lasting mark on their city. We find these on monuments, on gravestones. Wax tablets. An amazing example is a series of over 150 wax tablets belonging to Lucius Secundus, a banker, sufficient in number to give a statistical feel of the type and spread of business a middleman such as himself might have been involved in. They were found buried as a result of the earthquake which had hit the city in the year 62. These tablets contain good details of bank bookkeeping and accounts and receipts of some financial transactions undertaken. Even more interestingly, in terms of understanding Pompeian social culture, Lucundus himself, the son of the banker Libertus, freedman, these records show us that whilst a number of minor transactions were handled signed by other freedmen and slaves who evidently worked for him, Lucundus was evidently doing bigger business with a number of the city's upper class elite.